Fez and Kev talk about their first time in Ireland camp. Kev tells us why you should never trust Paul O'Connell at the dinner table, and Fez on what he sees going wrong at Ulster Rugby. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
I know what website you use most often, but it's a sister of YouTube.
Hi Rob, Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next year.
He's calling.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
I say YouTube is probably YouTube.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of The Hard Yards, the Sports Show Rugby podcast. I'm Andy McGeady. Welcome here to Stephen Ferris, Kevin McLaughlin and Pat McCarry. And later on, we get odds for the weekend's Pro 12 semi-final action from Hayley O'Connor of Ladbrokes. If you're listening to the podcast for the first time, subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. We had two pairs of tickets for the Guinness Pro 12 final to give away on the podcast last week. The winners are Connor Coyne and Chris McWilliams. Well done and enjoy the game. We have so much to cover on the podcast today. The Pro 12 semis that we talk about, Ulster's woes, I think we will go into in some depth. But first, we're going to talk about Ireland squad for the USA and Japan games. Uncapped players. But gentlemen, you think back to the first time you saw your name listed in an Ireland squad. You've got the call, there's people talking about you in the media, family and friends are talking about it. But what is it like walking into your first Ireland camp? Fez?
Oh, jeez. First of all, I was very nervous. You know, I only played a handful of games for Ulster, came from a club side, Dungannon, and got the call. Mark McCall was in charge of Ulster at the time, and he gave me my first cap for Ulster. And before I knew it, I was on my way to Killiney Castle with Simon Best on the way down in the car. And, you know, I remember getting in and sitting down, and a few of the lads used to meet, as Kev would know, used to meet up and go for a bit of food if you had time beforehand. I remember sitting there and realising that I didn't have any cash in my wallet to pay for the food, and I was like shaking and was looking at the menu trying to order like the cheapest thing. What's the soup of the day there? You know, and meeting the likes of John Hayes and Rico and the lads. You know, John Hayes, I just remember watching him play rugby, standing, you know, bawling his eyes out, 130-kilo man, crying his eyes out for the national anthem, and, you know, shaking his hand. His hand was, like, so big, and I was just looking at him in awe. He's an absolute gentleman, and, you know, I was coming in as this young fella, and, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know the lads' characters, and, you know, Simon Best tapped me on the shoulders, like, Stevie, you know, you don't have to pay for this. It's like, it's on the RFU. And I was like, okay, give us four portions of prawns there. And so it was daunting. Don't get me wrong. It's daunting because you're going into a squad with world-class players, some egos, some big characters. And it definitely took a while to settle in. But, you know, it was a good experience as well, and one that I enjoyed, and one that kind of probably made me grow a little as well.
Kev?
Yeah, I came in to a very established squad, and one, it's interesting you saying about like the meals when you arrive. Like, there were a load of those kind of rituals established by the time I came in, and I just didn't know what was going on. And there's no one that kind of, there's no onboarding experience.
So you don't get a welcome pack.
You don't get like a 2-day onboarding. Here's exactly what happens while you're here. You just got to figure it out. And like Fez said, like you stumble through loads of mistakes on that onboarding. And like, I remember the very first time we got on the coach for a training session from Killiney. I think it was out to Bray, or it might have been into Donnybrook or something. I just plonked myself down. I wasn't at the back, maybe about 3 seats from the back of the bus. And everyone started giving me funny stares. I was like, "What? Like, is there something on my face?" I was like, "What have I done wrong here?" And then saw a few people sniggering or whatever. And then Hayes starts marching down the bus with this filthy look, like a bull, like this filthy look in his face. That's my seat. I was like, sorry, Mr. Hayes, like got out, like legged it to the front of the bus. But like, they're like just examples of the rituals, and like you put your foot in it. It takes a while to settle. And to be perfectly honest, I was in and out of camp for kind of 4 or 5 years, whatever it was. I never fully settled in. I was never like an established international. So it's hard because you're fully established in your province, but then you're going to the international setup and you're trying to understand exactly what the dynamics are. But there's new guys coming in and out the whole time. So every season there's a new set of stars or there's a new set of up-and-coming players. And the dynamic changes all the time. So it's a huge challenge for a coach to keep a stable, like, positive dynamic within the camp and keep a strong environment. And that's one of the challenges an international coach has. But yeah, it's really hard going in for the first time. The nerves are exceptional, and you obviously want to make a good impression. And sitting in someone like John Hayes' seat wasn't a great start for me.
But well, what is the key part that makes that is nerve-wracking? Is it the pressure to perform in front of, you know, the best of the best that the country has to offer, or is it the coach has picked me, or is it, like you say, seeing those big names up close and personal for the first time as a colleague rather than someone against you?
Yeah, and again in Cliny Castle, I'm standing there and I'm picking up my kit bag or something, or talking to like Willie Bennett, who was the masseuse, who was, you know, really friendly and invited you into the environment. And then like Dricko, you know, always parked his car not in the car park, like outside the team room, because he could do that. So he jumps out of his car and he walks through like the fire escape. He doesn't come in the normal door, the fire escape, and he came walking over and he was chatting to a few people, and I just kind of caught his eye, and he just came over and he went, "Brian." And I went, "Oh, Stevie, nice to meet you." And then he just turned around and started chatting to other people. And I think it's like those characters, you see the captain of Ireland, you know, walking in, and I'm like, straight away, am I good enough to be here? Do you know, I doubted myself loads of times, especially in training. You were, you know, so scared to make a mistake. Like, I was like, please just catch this ball and pass it on, you know, in the warm-up drills. And you're just kind of, I agree with Kev, it took a long time to settle in. But I think when I did settle in is when I went on a tour with Ireland. And when you disappear away to Argentina like I did in 2006, you know, when the A team, they were getting preparation for the World Cup in 2006-2007, you know, that's when it kind of, you come out of your shell and you settle in a lot more and you get to know the guys personally. You're rooming with guys that you know, you like, Gordon Darcy, or
I was going to ask who's the first guy you were rooming with?
We were chatting earlier on before the show, and I actually can't remember. I think it would is Gordon Darcy, or who else did I say, Pat?
Yeah, there was a memorable
Gav.
I think it was
Gavin Duffy. Duffy, maybe something like that. Yeah. But there was like a core group of maybe 15 lads that room with each other all the time. So like the Shaggies, the O'Driscolls, O'Connell, O'Gara, they all kind of shared with the same people.
The families are already set up.
Families are set up, and us blow-ins, like, who were coming in for different sessions and weren't established, you know, you find yourself switching about a few times. But also thought that's a good thing, because you get to know people personally instead of just from a work perspective.
It adds to the nerves, though. You're like, who am I going to spend the next week in a room with? You don't know until you get in.
So who did you get to room with?
And in with Leinster, it was always with Dev, but with Ireland, it varied every single time, because I wasn't established, say. So every time I'd go to the reception, either in Killiney or in Carton House, I'd be asking them at reception who am I room with. So you're like, who am I spending the next 7 days with?
I don't exactly see him.
And the Justin Fitzpatrick one, is he a memorable guy to room with? Did you ever kind of forget that experience?
Justin Fitzpatrick, I roomed with him at Ulster, and I remember my first away trip to Galway, and we were playing Connacht away, and you know, get the bus down, and I was still one of the young lads trying to make sure I was starting week in, week out for Ulster, and of course get the rooming list, and Fitzy was like, "Fizz, you're with me, let's go." And I was like, right, okay. So I grab his bags and my bags, and we walk up to the room and get into the room, and I think he goes to the bathroom for a number two, like, or something, right? And he walks out and he's completely buff naked, and he goes, "All right, Stevie." And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you want to play Mummy or Daddy tonight?" And I went, "What?" He says, "Do you want to play Mummy or Daddy?" And I said, "Well, Mummy." And he goes, "Okay, Daddy it is then." And he's just standing there, completely buff naked. And I'm like, is this the way this goes? Or what have I signed up to? And then, of course, you get down to the team room and I slag a few people and chat about what Fitzy's just done. And he says, "Oh, he's been doing that for the last 15 years with any roommate that he has." So that's just one experience. Big Justin Fitzpatrick now, I coach him in America. He was a good character to be around, and it was good fun. But, geez, yeah, that'll... live in my memory forever, seeing Justin Fitzpatrick waddle out of the bathroom, ask me if I wanted to play mummy or daddy.
Would there be anybody who's kind of good for the wind up, you know, especially behind the new lads, like just like go up there and tell him you're not going to take that anymore? Or, well, I'd imagine Roger would be somebody who'd be kind of, you know, that seat's not taken down the back of the bus or something like that.
I remember one of my first camps, Paul O'Connell, what a gent, you know. He was one of the people who would have come up to me and made time and spent time with me on the plays, and so I built up a lot of trust for him in those first couple of weeks. And then we were having a meal and in Fitzpatrick Hotel, and there was some sauce, no one knew what it was, so Paulie's like, see what that sauce is there, Kev. So I picked up a big, huge big spoon of it, and I kind of, he goes, give it a smell there. So I put it to my nose and he slapped the spoon and covered my entire face in the sauce, and I looked at him, my heart was broken. I was like the entire room laughed at me. I was like, I thought you were nice. No, but it was just like, the younger guys do get a little bit of that, but I mean, it's overall everyone respects each other and everyone's there to do a job. And
but you've both mentioned something about you're going into a new dynamic, a new environment. It's a new group. When do you begin to feel a little bit part of it? As in, kind of, okay, I'm used to this here. I know the rituals. It's grand. When does that happen?
It's when you start playing matches, you know, and you start getting in that match day squad, and you. The match weeks, you know, the build up, and you're in the training, and you're, as Kev said, you're not in and out. So you know, I find myself, you know, a few weeks during Six Nations where you're in for 2 or 3 days, and then you disappear for 2 weeks, and a couple of other different back rowers are in, and you're going back and playing for Ulster, and then, you know, you swap around again, and it's when you actually get into that match day 23, is when you really feel a part of it, and you're winning and losing together as a squad, and you're not just in and out. And when you're in and out, it's really difficult. Like, and it's you kind of thinking in your head, how can I break into this squad? And all you can do is keep playing well for your club or your province, until an opportunity comes. And when that opportunity does come, you have to try your very best to try and nail it down. But it's so difficult. And fortunately, there was a few years where I was kind of starting most weeks for Ireland, and I really, really enjoyed being a part of a really good, close-knit group. And, you know, I went to the 2007 World Cup, never got selected, felt like a complete outsider. Me, Brian Carney, Brian Young and Alan Quinlan, the Bordeaux Four. we've done our own training, we went done our own weights, and we just didn't feel a part of it. And you just need to break in there and make sure that everybody's happy, and a happy environment, you know, will bring success to the team. And I was fortunate enough for that to turn around for the 2011 World Cup, where I was starting most weeks. Every guy on that tour got some game time. So to answer your question, it's just about getting in there and you know, being in a winning and losing teams and winning and losing together.
It's so hard. you talk about you know, when you get into the international camp, you know, we've spoken about in the provinces before, it's the A team versus the B team essentially in training. It's the same international camp, but if you've been selected to come to an international camp, it's a bit of a cliche, but the intensity does go up. It's a level above what you do in province, because everyone there has a fighting chance of getting involved, particularly in the first week when everyone comes in. There's no game that weekend and everyone's trying to prove themselves, and the 15s will always be mixed around, so the coaches will try and keep everyone on their toes. But I never got fully established in the Ireland team, and it was incredibly difficult. Like Fez said, I was, every time I went out in the training park, I was trying to prove myself. I was never fully ingrained.
He was a nightmare. He kept like hitting me a slap, and we've got live mauling today, and Kev's like, here we go.
Because you got to take every opportunity to try and show your hunger and show your, you know, that you should be there. But it's so competitive. Like, everyone is fighting for every inch in training, which is awesome. Like, it's really enjoyable to be involved in, but you're under pressure all the time, and especially when you're trying to establish yourself and you get a start, you know, you only have one chance really, or you're gone, because it's in back row anyway. There's 10 guys just sitting there hungry, ready to go, ready to take that jersey.
Yeah, so. It's a traditionally deep position for an least in the last sort of number of, we'll say, rugby generations.
Yeah.
But I think the assumption might be that outside, that you walk into the Ireland squad and you walk out again after that first setup, and you're walking on air, you know, you're a giant. But if you're not feeling as if you're going to be established in the core, is there another side to that? You know, you're sort of saying, "Oh God, I have to prove myself again."
Yeah, it is. It's relentless. But that's what ambitious people want. Is they get into Ireland squad, and that's only the first part. The next thing is they want to get 10 caps. Then they want to get 50 caps. And so I have huge admiration for the likes of Fez, Shawnee, Jamie, guys who've established themselves as, particularly in a position like back row, where there are so many in the country, that to nail down and hold a position for your country in a back row slot in Ireland is so hard. And you just can't let up in terms of the way you play, your consistency, the way you train, and the way you respect the jersey when you put it on. It's extremely challenging and hard.
Mm. Especially with lads coming up and trying to drill you and train it.
Exactly, that's what you're up against. So.
But the most, when it's really, really competitive, that's when you kind of see the best coming out of people and who actually, you know, is up for the challenge. And some great days in training where, you know, there's blood coming out of people and, you know, you're getting absolutely stuck in. And when there's live mauling, there's some guys who are the established guys, you're sitting there going, oh no, you know. Yeah. David Wallace back in the day always went, oh geez, this hammy of mine's getting a bit tight here. You know, and he's playing against Australia later on that week or something. But it was just a great environment, and you need that competition to get the best out of people.
Mm. So let's talk about the actual squad that's been named. They've named 31, 8 new caps, and also 8 uncapped players, and then 14 with fewer than 10 caps. Yeah. So that's a big chunk of the squad who are on the lower end of the experience scale. There's a 32nd to be named after this weekend's games, which we will come to. The captain is not yet named, which we might talk about. But the uncapped lads, Rory Scanlon, for me, screams out as somebody who has made his way right up to the top of the tree. And I think we should be talking about him on this tour as someone we really want to see get some game time.
Yeah, it was interesting to see someone like McCloskey and Chris Farrell, who a lot of people had tipped to make this tour, didn't make it. But with Scanlon being somewhere there, like, it'd be interesting to see if Scanlon and Ringrose are paired together. Scanlon's a guy I've seen a good bit of at Munster this season, and he's happy to kind of take on, you know, kicking out of hand during games and stuff like that, and very confident, kind of can take goal kicks if he's needed to as well. And just someone, like, you know, I know even you know, Ronan O'Gara is a massive fan of him, has kind of tipped him to kind of play for Ireland as well. So I'd say he'll get a run. I'd say, I know Luke Marshall's in the squad as well, but I think they'll definitely look at him. They'll start him in maybe two of the games, I'd say, because he's someone that Joe Schmidt rates very highly.
Yeah, Kev, he's a different kind of 12 in that he's a 12-10 rather than a 12 carried up the middle.
Mm. Yeah, he is, and he's played great stuff for Munster this year. In terms of the squad, it's an interesting blend. It's very, very light in experience, like you said. So Joe is using this tour to plan forward, and he's building a squad for 2019 at this point. And what he's going to be looking for in this tour is for leaders to emerge, because there's no real obvious leaders besides, say, Reese Ruddock, Paddy Jackson, Dev and a few guys like that, Cian Healy. There's no one with huge experience there. So besides those obvious guys, Joe's going to be watching like a hawk to see who actually steps up. It's a very interesting dynamic when you take the kind of 8 or 9 most experienced players out of a squad, because it just changes. Everyone realises, the less experienced guys realise they have to step up. Mm. And you'll see a change in dynamic. You'll see guys in meetings speaking that wouldn't have spoken. Lancaster said some really interesting things during the week, that he puts huge pressure on his players to speak up in meetings and give their opinions, because they can't rely on the senior players all the time. And when they put on the jersey, it's a player. It doesn't matter whether they're senior or not. And I think Joe will be looking for the same thing this tour, is for guys to step up and own things. And that'll have a huge bearing on what the future of Irish rugby is, particularly for the World Cup in 2019.
Well, it's a big opportunity for these guys. Excuse me, as you say, like, but as long as they know that this is an opportunity, you know, like, there's 11 guys off in the Lions tour, that's fine. There's a couple of big names like Jamie Heaslip, Rob Kearney, Sean Curran, who aren't in the squad for various reasons, mostly injury related. But apart from the Ruddocks, who do we see potentially stepping forward as leadership material here? Or do we wait for the tests and see what happens on the field?
Yeah, it's funny, we were chatting also about before the show started about who would potentially captain the side, and you know, Reece Ruddock is somebody who leads by example on and off the pitch. And, you know, he's professional in everything that he does, and I think he's been playing some outstanding rugby this last number of weeks. So he's definitely going to step up to the plate. He's kind of one of the one of the old heads in there, you know, and he hasn't got a lot of caps under his belt. So there's responsibility that lies with him. Devon Toner, you know, he's going to work hard with the young lads like Kieran Treadwell in there, you know, teaching them the ropes when it comes to the line out, the dark arts of international rugby. And it's going to be, for me, I'm really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did expect to pick up the newspaper the next day or flick online and see, you know, Andrew Trimble and, you know, Jamie Heaslip and see all the guys that you would normally expect to see in the squad. I did expect to see that. But when I do look at the squad, I go, geez, you know, Irish rugby is good. There's all these guys that are coming through. The future is bright. And I just hope for them that they go out there and they relish the opportunity, because an international cap, it's hard enough to get one. And they're going out there on a tour. You know, there's three caps to be had, and you really got to put everything on the line to try and get three caps.
Well, you mentioned Trimble. So there's no Trimble. There's no Craig Gilroy. Also, which is probably something to talk about in its own right. But the Ulster player who is in there is Jacob Stockdale. Now, I know you're a fan of him.
Yeah, massive fan of Jacob Stockdale. 9 tries for Ulster this season. Probably been the pick of the back three players, him and Charles Pietau. And it seems to be when the squad is at full strength for Ulster that Jacob Stockdale finds himself on the bench. You know, Andrew Trimble usually starts. Reason being he's been starting is because he's captain of Ulster this season. So it's pretty hard to leave your captain on the bench or out of the squad. And I think Trimble would be the first person to say, you know, he hasn't recaptured the form, the old form of Andrew Trimble, and he's still digging for it. He's had a few injuries over the last, you know, 18 months. It's still in there. I still think, you know, Andrew's got a lot to give when it comes to international rugby, but he'd be the first person to say that, you know, maybe Jacob would deserve to go ahead of him, even though deep down inside he's probably going, right, you know, this is maybe the kick up the backside that I need to turn things around over the next year. Because, you know, I played with Andrew at under 21 level, you know, under 19 level. How many years at international rugby does he have left as an international winger? You know, probably only a couple of years. So he's got to think, right, I got to maximise these next couple of years. And when I do get that opportunity, like Kev and myself talked about, that you do go out there and you try and get that jersey back, because nobody owns a jersey. And there's already somebody there knocking the door.
He's also one of the players who is, you know, he's on the shelf that Joe has labelled, I know what this guy can do, I trust him. And even if he was out of camp for a year and a half, I could bring him in and I know exactly that he would fit into everything in terms of the group and what I want from on the field.
But is that a good thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't be too worried if I were Andrew, though. I mean, Joe, like you say, Joe knows what he can do. And Joe's a massive fan of his.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he will get a phone call this week from Joe and an explanation. But he also knows that, say, someone like Stockdale's putting huge pressure on him, not only in Ireland but in Ulster as well. With the Craig Gilroy thing, do you think Joe's decided that maybe he's not the future, or do you think?
Again, Craig's really a young guy. You know, everybody, he's been around so long. He's nearly in 150 caps for Ulster.
Yeah.
You know, and he's still in his mid-20s, so I just don't know, Kev. I think he scored a hat-trick, you know, against Italy. Come on off the bench, scored a hat-trick. Was it the second Irish player to ever score a hat-trick after CJ?
Yeah.
Or third? Was there one more? Sorry,
before that. There was one more before that in the Six Nations, yeah.
You know, that's pretty hard to do. And I don't know if he come off and pissed Joe off in some way after the game, but Joe immediately said, post-match interview, that, you know, Craig missed a tackle or something.
He doesn't fit the mould of Joe Winger.
No,
that's
the
only thing I'd say. He's not a Trimby. He's not a McFadden. He's not a Zeebo. He's not physical.
Yeah, and Zeebo's pretty the guy who at the start was also in that mould.
Yeah.
And he's adapted parts
he's
of
adapted,
his game to
yes.
change. Because Joe seems to like a winger who is I made a comparison earlier on off air to John Aldridge in the old Jack Charlton days, who was a brilliant goal hanger, a brilliant poacher, lethal from a yard. But for Ireland, he wanted him working.
Right.
He wanted him working all around the field.
I've watched Craig over the last 6 or 7 years and played with him, and very rarely, if ever, does he get steamrolled and a winger scores in the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, he punches above his weight, and for me, the only criticism I would have is he's not brilliant like, you know, a Rob Kearney or a Zeebo in the air. So mm-hmm. when, you know, box kicks are being put up, you know, he struggles slightly.
Mm.
But at the same time, what he offers in attack, you know, it's
well that's
like he's like a Stuart Hogg. Yeah, Stuart Hogg's, you know, for me, is a very, very poor defender. But what he offers in attack is unbelievable. So Craig, finds himself very, very unlucky, especially when you look down, you see like Andrew Conway, who leapfrogged McGeehan for the last international in Six Nations. I think he finds himself unlucky, but I think I agree with Kev.
Hit the nail on the head, though.
He doesn't fit the mould at the minute.
Yeah, it's the air. It's definitely, like, Joe puts huge emphasis on winning the aerial battle, and Andrew Conway has improved that a lot, and maybe that's where Craig's missing out, but he's definitely unfortunate.
Yeah, well, Craig Gilroy never played for Leinster, which is his own fault. So,
easy now.
Conspiracy time. Does the Irish selection tell us anything about the Lions? I mean, does this mean that, look, if Jamie Heaslip's not travelling with this team and fit enough to play, he's not going anywhere near Lions tour?
Yeah, like, it's not the first thing you think about, but then you start looking at it and you're like, you know, if, like, Heaslip hasn't played in, you know, since March 10th, wasn't it, against Wales?
Which is about 3 years in Heaslip injury recovery time.
Yeah, so, like, if he doesn't come back, like, you can't see Heaslip making a Lions squad now. So no. It's not like, unless he goes on holidays in New Zealand or something like that and just picks up a game. Like,
does a games, Tom Court special.
Yeah, plays for a county's Manukau or something like that in a club game. But, yeah, the likes of even lads I would have thought, like Sean Cronin, Dunica Ryan, might have been maybe first guys in reserve. Even Rob Kearney, first guys in reserve now, because they're not going on that tour. They're not going to be match fit. Is that just them out of the reckoning? Whereas lads like Zeebo and Healy, and even Earls are going over. Are those the lads then from the Irish side of things? Ringrose looks like a definite. Are they the lads then who have a chance to go up for the Lions?
Yeah, for me, they're the guys in the mix. I don't think Gats is going to bring anyone that's not match fit. I think he's drawn a line in the sand, apart from Warburton, who will go regardless. He'll go on one leg. He's only going to bring match fit players.
Yeah, I think so. One final point. I was really good to see that the official relief of the squad talked about the three young Irish coaches going on the various legs of the tour. 40-year-old Rog, 41-year-old Gerv, there's hope for us all yet. Felix, I know you're only 29, but you know. We'll leave it there. Next up we'll chat about, I think we'll have a little chat about Ulster Rugby and where they are now and where they might go.
Well, you got something to write with? Good, it's time to work on your interviews.
My interviews? What do I got
to
do?
Week to week, no matter who you're playing, you're going to say the same thing time and time again.
You're going to have to learn your cliches.
You're going
to
say, you know, it's a big big challenge this weekend, got to get up for it.
You're going to have to study them, you're going to have to know them.
So many cliches in players as well as journalists. I'm looking at you here. You must be so fed up and bored of listening to this stuff.
We got
to
play them one day at a time.
Well, you know, the press conference yesterday, I was asked, you know, about, you know, three big games left to try and make playoffs. And what did I say? We're all just looking forward to just taking one game at a time, aren't we?
Pretty boring. Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down.
What a ridiculous, boring cliche.
I know. Write it down.
Yeah. You can't not be boring. You just got to say the same old stuff everybody says.
You'll say it best when you say nothing at all.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, and we're back on the Hard Yards. And since we have Mr. Ferris on the podcast today, I think it's worth a little time to talk about Ulster season, because in the next segment we'll be talking about Munster's semi-final, Leinster semi-final, Connacht are playing for their time. But Ulster, it's probably been a little bit unfulfilling.
How long have we got here, by the way? We could be here all day. I got to watch what I say. I think this season has been... the expectation levels of fans... me now as a fan, everybody just wants the team to do well. You see the amount of money that's been invested, you know, the coaches that have been brought in. The team still isn't reaching its targets, and you know, this Ulster side, with the amount of talent that there is in the squad, should be definitely getting to knockout rugby in both the Champions Cup and the league. And it's just a really, really disappointing season. Everybody up north is talking about why is this happening? Why are we underachieving constantly year in, year out? Since the 2012 European Cup final, where Kev beat lumps out of me for 80 minutes and they won convincingly in the end, it seems to have went backwards. And you know, Shane Logan come out and I keep saying this because people aren't listening to me. They gotta listen to me. And you know, Shane Logan said that Ulster were going to be the best team in the world, not the best club team in the world, not Europe, the world. And within the 5-year plan, we were going to win a European Cup and we were going to win a league. And it just went backwards since then. Yeah, you've got to set realistic targets.
Yeah, I was going to say, because in fairness, like setting a lofty goal is not a bad thing. But I think what you're saying is that that is now so detached from what has happened that someone needs to look hard and see, well, what is actually going on here?
You got to set a vision, and being really lofty, your vision is okay, but then you got to, you know, narrow things into a really short focus. And maybe that's what Ulster are missing a bit, is to win a European Cup and to win a league, you know, it involves a huge number of processes and a huge number of things to happen, and it takes years to build what you need. So I mean, I would imagine that in Ulster the focus needs to be in putting the building blocks in place, and for me that starts at the bottom. So like their academy, their schools, up to their academy structure, up to the types of players they get in, up to the culture they build, and like adding those blocks together, and then you start talking about winning a European trophy. I think my big concern for Ulster at the moment is they're losing the guy they built their game around in PNR for the last 4 or 5 years. Their academy's not exactly churning out players. Their coach is under huge pressure, and now there's a big rifle pointing at Jono Gibbs's head as he comes in, because everyone's saying Jono's going to fix things, and that's not a nice scenario for a coach coming into a new club. I mean, Jono will add a lot, but at the end of the day, he's going in to support Kissy and help him out and hopefully create something different. But it's not going to be all on him. It needs to come from the senior players. It needs to come from, start with Kissy, then the senior players, and then right down throughout the roots of Ulster rugby. How do you start churning out like top quality players, like is happening in Leinster at the moment?
It's, and that's the problem. Nobody can put their finger on why this, you know, why are we not getting young players like Dan Levy's coming through that, you know, can step into international rugby straight out of the academy. It's just not happening up in Ulster. But it was over at the European Cup final at the weekend, watching Saracens, and all the Saracens players were there, all the guys who were on the fringes were there, all their academy players were there. You know, they were on the pitch celebrating together. It was about 70 people from Saracens on the pitch, and they all know one another. They all were shaking hands and high-fiving each other, and there just seems to be this unbelievable culture, this kind of passion to work hard for one another. And it doesn't matter if you're it doesn't matter if you're the 17-year-old who's just out of school and breaking into the system, or you're the, you know, the Mario Toji who's just been picked to go on a Lions tour and is probably one of the best second rows in the world. It doesn't matter. You're just all as a collective and as one. And at the minute, Ulster rugby for me just seems to be a wee bit all over the place, and nobody really knows what they're trying to buy into yet. And I think Kev, you know, saying that Jono coming in, you know, Les in charge of everything, hopefully they're going to figure that out over pre-season, and everybody's going to buy into the direction that they want it to go. But for me, it's just all over the place, and when you're losing and you're underperforming and you're not achieving, then that just adds to the pressure, and it's just a difficult place to be.
If I was Kissy, I'd be going over and sitting down with Martin McCull, and I'd spend a couple of days with him, and I would learn everything that he's done in Saracens, because this Saracens thing didn't happen overnight. This has been building since around 2010 or whenever Martin McCull went over there. He had a vision for the club, and the culture he's built has grown over there is incredible. And it's visible every single time they play. They play for each other. They play with humility. They respect every opposition they play against, and they play with a level of consistency that speaks of champions. And Martin McCull leads from the front. He's really humble in the way he acts. He treats people with respect, and because of that, the players do the same. I was over visiting Ian Madigan in Bordeaux last summer, and the Saracens team happened to be in the same restaurant we were in. So we were sitting like at a higher tier and looking down at them. They had the whole bottom floor of the restaurant rented out, and I just observed the way they behaved. And they are, there were 70 of them, like you said, the academy, the younger guys, everyone, and everyone was treated the exact same way. They were having a bit of a jolly up, and you could just tell they were like, this is a tight group. And how do you build that? It takes time. You can't just flick a switch and say we're tight now.
But the contrast is interesting, because there's been so much effort put into the and in fairness, successful effort putting into like the overhaul of the stadium, some of the facilities, so the off pitch parts of the infrastructure. But I think, Fez, what you might be getting at is that what's going on with the core of what you're trying to build around, because you've come to the end of the PNR generation. So the PNR thing, PNR was always going to leave at some stage. It's the, what are you building towards? And what we'd seen was that, like, in fairness, Leinster had done and Munster had done before, they'd brought in some critical foreign players in position, people who had leadership, so they could actually help build out right? And people could learn from them. But we're not seeing this next step here.
We're not, and it's a worry for me, the amount of Ulster guys that are coming through the system and are representing their province.
You mean people who are actually
born and bred in Ulster. And a friend of mine who signed for Munster at the start of this season and ended up moving to Connacht, the guy called John Andreas, and he never got onto the match day 23 from Munster. And I said, why? He says, Razzie only wants to pick homegrown guys who actually know what it means to play for Munster. Like, so if there's a young guy who's a tight head, and he's showing a bit of belief and he's, you know, got a bit of hunger about him, he's going to pick him ahead of me every single time. And I'm not saying that's necessarily right, but it's something that John was like, that's fair enough. You know, this guy has played his whole career wanting to play for Munster Rugby. I'm just coming in here, you know, trying to establish myself as a Munster man. That didn't work out for him. So at Ulster, you know, I just look at the pack when the lads are away next year, the Irish internationals are away on Irish duty, and you go, okay, there's a new South African prop Van der Merwe coming in. You have Marcel Coetzee at number 8, Arno Boutte at number 7, Sean Reedy at number 6, Kieran Treadwell in the second row with Alan O'Connor, Peter Brown, Vian Herbst at tight head, and you know, you just look at the pack and you go, hold on a second, yes, there's a couple of Irish qualified players in there, but none of them were born and bred in Ulster. And it's a worrying thing for me, because you don't want a province like Ulster or any of the provinces turn into the likes of a Toulon, who just go out and buy marquee players year in, year out, and hope that because you've got this unbelievable name and Marcel Coetzee that it's going to turn things around. And you got to build a team, and Ulster just don't have that at the minute. And look, I'm on the outside now looking in. I'm not in there. I don't know exactly what's going on. But back in 2010, when Brian McLaughlin came into the Ulster setup, the first thing that we talked about was about culture. And we started to work on things and come together as a group. And, you know, we went on to achieve knockout stages. Unfortunately, we didn't win anything. But, you know, as a group and as a team, it was the best team that I've been involved in. And it was the most enjoyable. And when you're enjoying your work and you're enjoying your rugby, then you seem to put that into performances. And to me, the Ulster lads aren't enjoying themselves at the minute, because that's certainly shown in the performances over the last couple of months.
But also, just going back to that point, Ulster will never be able to compete with Toulon in terms of getting the best marquee players in, because they don't have the same budget. None of the Irish provinces will, so they have to do something different. And when you get Brian O'Driscoll retiring and someone like Gary Ringrose taking his jersey, that is hugely impactful for the game in Leinster, because you think about all the schools guys and all the sub-academy guys that are watching that happen. And they're thinking, okay, so when Jamie Heaslip retires, when Luke McGrath retires, I could be the next number 9. Or no. Whereas in Ulster, when you see, I don't know, Roger Wilson retiring and then bringing in a South African guy, what is the impact that's having on the school guys in Ulster and the academy guys in Ulster? They're going, why would I bother working my ass off here? They're just going to bring in a foreign player. Like, you have to think about those knock-on impacts. And I think Leinster are blessed in that they've got this school structure that churns out players. But Ulster have to change something. They have to do something different at the lower ranks to bring through homegrown players and have more players in the Ulster pack with a Belfast accent. Yeah, or well, Northern accent. That's so important.
That's a great point, Kev, yeah.
Yeah, there's two sides. I think you're talking about the pathway, but it's also the other side of that. It's identity. You know, and it's the one advantage. Absolutely. Which the Irish provinces do is that we do still think of them as provinces, provincial sides made up of people from the various counties and cities in the land, and not simply as clubs. Now, I know there's a professional game, and they are essentially, these are franchises, these are clubs.
Yeah.
But it is an advantage that we have here, and it is something that maybe we should just try and think about. But I think it's very interesting, Fred, that you're there, and you said it right at the start, that you're looking at this as a fan now. You know, yeah. So you're a player that was one side, but you're now a fan. You say, look, I really would like to see this team shaped differently.
I know that, you know, professional rugby has evolved so, so much over the last 10 years. But, like, you talk to people in the pub afterwards after an Ulster rugby match. People have been going to Ulster matches for the last 20 years. And they used to watch Ulster run out, and there was 15 Ulster men on the pitch that were playing for Ballymena or playing for Malone or playing for Harlequins or Cook or whoever. And they were running out, 15 guys born and bred in Ulster. And that's just, I know the professional game has moved on, and yes, if you want to keep evolving as a team and getting the best out of people, you bring the likes of Jarrod Payne in, who's going to make players around him better. But at the same time, you got to get that core group of players, homegrown lads. As Kev says, guys with Belfast accents walking around training instead of South African guys talking in Afrikaans. Do you know, so it's for me, as an Ulster fan now, I just want to see more young players. But maybe there just isn't those young guys at the minute. Maybe we're going through a 2 or 3, 4 year period where there just isn't the talent at that underage level. That could also be a possibility.
But
they got to try and improve it.
In return, like, would you be happy to have another year or two where you're kind of struggling? Like, if these young lads are coming in, like Munster have almost went through for the last 2 or 3 years, where you're like, these young lads are getting a chance, and it's starting to change, but you're going to have to struggle for a couple of years. Like, would you be happy enough to kind of deal with that with Gibbs, or is it a bit of a mix?
There was a lot of games where there weren't a lot of fans in the stands looking at these young guys coming through, you know?
Yeah. Again, like, I've watched Ulster so much over the last few years, and when do you see one of the young guys, you know, out of the academy given a chance in the full team where Ruan Pienaar is playing and Paddy Jackson's playing? It's only when the Irish lads disappear or, you know, that they possibly get onto the bench to sneak an opportunity. They still go with the likes of Robbie Diak and, you know, Chris Henry, Sean Reedy, these kind of guys, you know, they keep going with them boys week in, week out, instead of going, right, there's 3 of the best academy guys, let's put them into a full Ulster rugby team and give them an opportunity. I just haven't seen that at all this year.
Yeah, I can only think of like someone like Kyle McCall as like a local lad that's come from recent years. But you struggle to pick 2 or 3 lads that have come up and been given that run in the team.
Stockdale really is the only one. And again, when he's probably the best back 3 player for us this season. But yet, when there's a full team, he's on the bench. And that's because you've got Charles Piatai on one wing, and, you know, the captain Trimble on the other, and you know, Louis Ludic or Jarrod Payne playing fullback. So, look, it's a touchy subject. We could sit here all day and talk about it.
So let's talk about this. Finish something slightly different. Kev, you mentioned earlier on, like, John O'Gibbs is going to be involved in the setup next year. You've worked with him before. What can the Ulster team and fans expect from this arrival?
Yeah, so John O is, he was worked obviously under Joe for a long time and very, very detail oriented and focused. He's added a lot more to his CV since he worked with me. So he's got a lot more experience. I think going to France, was a huge challenge for me to go and learn French, go into Clermont, a really established club, and he's done a great job there. If you look at the way the Clermont pack has performed over the past number of years, he's a very calm and focused guy, extremely uncompromising, expects very high standards, level of detail, and I think he'll be a great support for Kissy. I think him and Kissy will get on well. I think they'll drive high standards, and I think he will bring a level of detail to the forwards play. I think if you watch Ulster against Leinster a couple of weeks ago, if Jono was doing the video review over that, there would have been a laptop smash. Like, I think the Ulster line out or the Ulster hooker, or they called the ball to where Dev was standing, I'd say at least 6 times, which is just totally inexcusable. Myself and Fez were discussing it, that just shouldn't happen. And I think Jono will help iron out things like that, and just that level of detail he brings to the forwards play will undoubtedly help.
But Les has got to let Jono Gibbs coach, you know, he's got to let him in, and he's got to say, right, this is what you offer, let's get it out there, and they got to work together. And I think, again, I'm not in the camp, but by all accounts, you know, the last few months, Neil Doak, Alan Clark haven't been doing that much coaching in Ulster, and Les has been very, very hands-on and very controlling of taking all the responsibility of the coaching. And you know, when Dwayne Peel and John O'Gibbs come in, they got to share the responsibility of the coaching, and they got to work together. And if the coaches aren't working together, then, you know, that goes into the squad as well. And I think we've seen that very much over the last couple of weeks.
Well, fingers crossed that we can be sitting here next season talking about a great turnaround.
I really hope so.
Get you back for part 2 next year.
Up next, we'll look ahead to this weekend's Pro 12 semi-finals, and we get the best odds from Ladbrokes.
The Hard Yards.
Now, when the cups are decided, you have fine weather, but that's probably a 2-month period. You have to do the Hard Yards.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Excuse the pun.
No, that's perfect. We're going to use that now.
I'm on a bonus for that, definitely. Yeah. Get that in.
The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards.
On Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
We have a big weekend of Pro 12 semi-final action ahead of us, and a good one for Irish rugby fans. Leinster against Scarlets on Friday night, Munster versus Ospreys in the two semi-finals, and of course Connacht play away to Northampton in the Champions Cup semi-final, playoff semi-final this weekend. Let's start with Leinster. Kev, over to you. How confident are you that Leinster will not mess up and beat Scarlets this weekend?
No, I'm confident, but Scarlets are in a hot streak and they're going to come and play. They know that the only way they beat Ulster or Leinster in the RDS is by throwing the ball around and having a go. And I played against the Scarlets, I think 2008, 2009, where they came to the RDS and beat us by 50 points. I think it was 54-10 or something like that. And they have the ability to do that. And the way they're playing at the moment, they'll score tries. I think it's going to be a cracking game. But I think Leinster should have enough.
What do Scarlets bring for the table? I know you're talking about they've always had the reputation of playing, you know, good running attacking rugby, but what will fans be looking for tomorrow night?
Well, they're just going to throw the ball around and have a go. They know that if they come and kick to Leinster, they'll lose the game. So they're going to run from everywhere. It's going to be high tempo. They're going to obviously know they need to score a couple of tries early on, put the pressure on Leinster. You're going to see some really exciting attacking rugby from both sides.
It's going to be a terrible game now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Pick and go.
Yeah, it's going to be pick and go for Scarlets, and Leinster are going to kick the letter off the ball. That's the way it's going to go.
And then we'll flip forward to Saturday. Munster play Ospreys. So another Irish-Welsh final as part of this league, which has four countries in it, but we'll come back to that some other time. Do Ospreys have more of a chance than Scarlets at progressing here, Kev?
No, I don't think so. I was over for the Ospreys Ulster match over at the Liberty Stadium, and they were pretty average. Kept giving the ball away, turning the ball over. They kick loosely. If Dan Bigger's not playing well, and you know Reece Webb's not playing well, then the team doesn't function at all. So, be interesting to see if Alan Wynne-Jones is going to line out and start, which you know is a big boost for the Lions squad. But for me, Munster are my tip to go on and win it. I think the emotion that they're going to be playing with and what has happened over the last year, I think they're going to be very, very difficult to beat in their own backyard. Their support, the fans that they're now getting at the games is huge. And even when Ulster went down there to play Munster were very, very poor, but they just got over the line. And that was because of the support and the emotion of everybody in the stadium. And I think they're going to be very, very difficult to beat. As I said, they're my tip to actually go on and win the competition.
Well, Pat, you were talking to Conor Murray recently, and he certainly talked about their desire to get some sort of trophy this season.
Yeah, speaking to Conor Murray, and then even speaking to Jack O'Donoghue recently, and they're just kind of saying,
stop name dropping, Pat. Geez.
And this wasn't even from a job; this was just kind of hanging out with them. But they're both kind of saying they're both very disappointed at that semi final against Saracens, and that they know as well that they didn't fire a shot. I know Erasmus came out and said they did, but they know they didn't perform like they should, so they'll be determined to kind of put it right. And the fact that they're playing at Thomond as well, and like it'll be a sellout, I'd say, I'd imagine, for the seventh or eighth time this season, which was kind of something completely different even this time last year. So yeah, they'll be right up for this, and they should have all their big stars kind of ready to rock for them as well. Probably Dunica Ryan's last game at home for Munster now as well, like, so they've got plenty of motivation for this as well, like, so they'll be fired up for this.
So we've been joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Hello. What are we looking at now in terms of Ladbrokes odds on these two semi-finals? I'm presuming that Leinster and Munster are both clear favourites.
Yeah, both clear favourites, but Munster are an even shorter price than Leinster are. They're 7-1 on at the moment, and the Ospreys are 9-2, the Scarlets 7-2, which agrees with what you're saying, that the Scarlets have a better chance of turning over the favourites than the Ospreys. But if you're looking at the spread, Munster -12 can be backed at 10-11, and CJ Stander, he was saying that, you know, there's no time for fatigue, like, he's trying to get everybody really pumped for this, so like a wide margin win could be within their grasp. Leinster can be backed -10 points at 10-11, and if you go back, I think it was in March, they beat them by 36 points or something like that. So, you know, backing a big margin win by Leinster mightn't be the most foolish thing.
Who's favourite for the championship?
Leinster are 8-11 and Munster 6-4.
to go all the way. So this is where I turn it over to our prediction king, Stephen Ferris.
Well, the last couple of months have went really, really well for me. And again, at the weekend, Stade Francais were -2 and Saracens were -5. And I jumped all over that and put a double on them. So, yeah, me and a couple of my friends from Heineken got a few quid out of that. But, yeah, to be honest, I have to sit and have a think about it and go through the team sheets with those two on the spread, because when it comes to knockout rugby, it's not a league match where, you know, you're going to play somebody else the following week. You know, it's
and you're looking for bonus points and all that.
Yeah. Everything is on the line here. Yeah. So, to be honest, I would probably be tempted to go the other way and say that the Ospreys will be within 12 points and that Scarlets will be within 10 points.
Crystal ball time. Give me two winners.
I'll give you the winners, no problem.
That's
Of course, Leinster and Munster are going to win, but it's just that there's no point in putting bets on unless you go with the spread for me. So, yeah, I'll have a think. Come back to me here in a second.
Well, I'm going to bet on the overs. I don't know what the overs unders are, but I reckon there'll be lots of points in the Leinster.
You are determined to ruin this game for everybody, aren't you?
There's going
to
be lots of pick and go.
It's
going to
be
6-3.
Yeah.
I'm going to have 50, 60 points in the game, in the Leinster Scarlets game.
Okay. They'll be quoting Kev before these games in Sky Sports again, won't they? Like,
yeah.
It's going to be a tri-fest.
But there is a game that's gone under the radar this weekend. So Connacht have, this was the season that shouldn't have been after they won the Pro 12 title. But they did make sure that they at least are in the playoff semi-final for the Champions Cup. So they're away to Northampton. Pat, it's on TV, thank God.
Yeah, TG4, yeah. Haven't got it yet.
So we can watch it. But this is a big game for Connacht.
Yeah, if they don't win this, so I know they have to win this and then they have to go to a playoff final, even if they win this against probably a French side as well. So they have to win it. They have been in absolutely dreadful form. They're coming into this, you know, in a horrible shape. But Saints aren't, you know, they're not knocking down doors either as well. So if they could get this, Lamb could leave a hero. He's not gonna, you know, walk out the door a villain, but he could leave a hero here if he can somehow leave Connacht after a pretty poor follow-up season from winning the league in the Champions Cup. He could walk away and say, I've done a good job there.
Is the goodbye factor a thing here?
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot of kind of emotion. He's gone back to Northampton as well. He's got a bit of history as well. And again, we always talk at the end of every season, like four or five lads heading out the door as well. Mm-hmm. There'll be a bit of that. There'll be the rallying call of do this for Bundy, like, you know.
The suspended Bundy Aki, yeah.
But I can't see them winning, because they're coming into this with zero form. But we could be surprised. We could have this type of Grenoble game as well, where they just go and fling the ball around. And
Jesus, you're trying to kill another game this weekend.
I think I'm a bit more confident than Kev that this could be like a 41 points to 39 game or something like that. So it's we'll probably just have the heavens open up for us now at the weekend and just be shite games of rugby.
but on a serious point here, lads, so to quickly run through this, is giving a coach a send off, a departing coach who has been a successful person and a key part of the club, is that extra motivation, or does that really matter to you as a player?
You're probably concentrating your own roles and responsibilities when it comes to the match. You're not really thinking about the coach. I'd say it had been talked about a good bit, Kev, during the week, you know, in the build up to it, amongst the players when they're standing and, you know, before training or after training in a squad circle, and they're saying, look, listen, this is Pat's last game, we need to put it in here. You know, this gives something to Pat that he's going to remember. But Connacht have got a tough job going over to Northampton. I know Northampton aren't playing well, Connacht are struggling, really, really struggling at the minute. So I don't give them much hope, but at the same time, they're a fighting squad. They always come out when their backs are against the wall, and I really hope that they do put in a performance for Pat, because Pat really deserves that, and he's done so much for Connacht rugby. But I think the emphasis is going to be put on the individual players to make sure that they perform on the day.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you to Kev, to Fez, to Pat and Hayley. Thank you to Joe Harrington for producing, and Shane Dempsey for looking after the sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. I'm Andy McGeady. This has been The Hard Yards. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.